Welcome to the Unsweetened SIO podcast. My name is Siobhan Harris. I am a certified integrative nutrition health coach and the founder of unsweetenedsio.com. I gave up all sugar and all flour on January 13th, 2018, and am finally free of my addiction. My mission is to help other sugar addicts find their path to freedom and live the sweet life without sugar. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 146 of Unsweetened SIO, the podcast. I'm going to be continuing my story, my own story of sugar addiction and recovery. I kind of did a part one in the May 4th episode, and it was going long, so I decided to do a part two today. And so I'll kind of pick up right where I left off. You know, I talked about giving up sugar and flour and knowing that it had to be both all flour and all sugar for 1 year and giving it, you know, that full year. I just knew intuitively that that's what I needed to do. And I wrote every day in my Word document as kind of my accountability piece. You know, that is the only thing looking back, and I wish I had more of a community. Now I've built up this really amazing community. It's why I do the podcast. Well, I also always told myself if I could help myself, I would definitely want to help others. And that's what I want this is to be, a resource for people and for people not to feel so alone. And just knowing that you aren't the only one out there feeling this way, and that there is hope and that there's a lot of help out there now too. So I strongly encourage people listening to have a really strong support system and really having that community and connection with other people that are going through the same exact thing, that can speak the language, that understand, you know, triggers and just all of the different ways that, you know, the addictive mind kind of takes over sometimes. So I do highly, highly recommend. There's so, I feel like even from, you know, 2017 when I started researching all this, there's just so much more out there now. So I really, really encourage anyone that's looking for help to find that group support or a coach or someone that just gets it. So I, you know, took that first year, and you can go back and listen to all of my recaps that I did last year, where I actually read from my journal entries, you know, not editing them, just reading them. Some of them are totally boring, but, you know, it's really fascinating was for me to read back, because I hadn't like gone as I was going along. I wasn't reading and reflecting back. So when I did those journal entries and the recaps last year, it was really emotional sometimes of seeing, wow, like just what a struggle it was and how far I've come and, you know, just some of the things that I was able to overcome. So I hope that you'll listen to those for some more details. But one thing that I do share a lot is that, you know, again, one of the big motivators for me was to lose weight, but I, you know, did lose a significant amount of weight. And I already went off on my soapbox about that, of not knowing how much, because I don't believe in weighing myself. I don't believe in the scale as an accurate, you know, overall view of, or snapshot of your health. But I also know just from clothing sizes that I lost a significant amount of weight. And now though, even though that was such a big motivation in the beginning, it's just this side effect now, or, you know, it's not even, I think it was on my top 10 benefits, but really low on the list, because there's just so many other amazing things, really overall being that mental clarity I have now and not having the constant tug of war, the mental warfare, I call it, of, am I going to eat this? Am I not going to eat this? Am I going to be good? Am I going to be bad? Why can't I get this? You know, all the shame and the guilt and just all the things, where now my brain is free and can just relax. But weight really was a huge, huge motivator in the beginning. I was just so unhappy and uncomfortable in my body. I remember being just very aware of, like, if I was sitting in the car and could feel the seatbelt across my stomach, it just was uncomfortable. I even remember flying and feeling like the, you know, seatbelt on the airline was getting kind of tight. Like, I could buckle it, but it was tight, you know? And I really did not like that feeling. So that was definitely a big, big reason that I wanted to, you know, figure this out. But it took a while. You know, when I do my group coaching, everyone's different. Some people lose weight right away and other people don't. And I was one of those people that didn't. It took me, I would say, like a good 5 months before I started feeling like a shift in my weight loss. And it's really apparent as I read through some of those, you know, journal entries during those first 5 months that that was really hard for me. Even though, again, thank goodness I had that kind of intuition, like, just keep going. You need to do this a full year. You know, it took you a long time to get to this point. It's not going to be overnight that you experience healing. You just need to keep going. Like, you've put your body through a lot. It probably doesn't trust what you're doing is going to stick right now. So I just kind of kept going. And the, you know, weight did start to come off. And I would say, you know, between 5 months and probably, you know, I don't know, definitely by the time I was a year into my recovery, I had lost all the weight that, you know, or at least gotten to the weight that I am now. I feel like I've pretty much have maintained that now for the past, you know, 3 years total of getting to this weight pretty effortlessly. Once I finally kind of got to that right size body. And then once it started coming off, it came off, you know, pretty quickly, like where I'd be, you know, in the closet, you know, I had all my small sizes to the, you know, extra large sizes of things that, you know, because my weight fluctuated up and down so much. And I just remember that being, you know, so freeing when first just my clothes that maybe were tight started fitting a little looser. And then all of a sudden they were like way too big. So then I'd go down a size and then, you know, wear those for a little bit. And then all of a sudden I'd have to go down another size. And so then I was wearing stuff in my closet that I hadn't worn in years. You know, I don't know if anyone else does that. Like, I would, part of like kind of like trying to motivate myself to finally lose weight, I would buy things at the store, like a cute bikini or a cute dress or shirt or whatever, but in like a size small or a size that I wanted to fit in, and would kind of hang it up. And that would hopefully, you know, inspire me. But normally that just kind of depressed me when I couldn't stick to something more than a few weeks and would lose weight and then just gain it back. And then I would just kind of bury that in my closet. But I actually had, you know, a good amount of clothes with tags still on them that I'd never worn. And it was really, really amazing to then be able to like put those clothes on, you know, and actually wear them. And then some of those clothes became too big. Like, that to me was so crazy. And then I actually had to go out and buy some clothes. And I used to hate, you know, shopping for clothes, because it was usually shopping for something bigger that would fit and not make me look too fat. And it was definitely a different experience, you know, just shopping for smaller clothes and actually feeling like, oh wow, I really look good in this. Like, just such a big shift in my overall self-image, you know, and just feeling comfortable for once in my body. And is it perfect? No. You know, I had 2 kids via C-section. You know, I definitely have, you know, belly flab that I cannot get rid of. And I've just kind of learned to accept myself exactly as I am, you know, and that's one of the affirmations I've been saying for a long time. I love and accept myself exactly as I am. And now I actually mean it when I say it. You know, I love myself unconditionally and abundantly. It's another affirmation I say. And now I actually mean it. You know, when I started saying affirmations, or there might be some days I'm not feeling it all the way, but I say it anyway. And I say it out loud and I say it with conviction. And it really has started, you know, for me to believe it and feel it. So it did, though, take a while. And then I just like to share that part with people. And in general, it took me a good 5 months before I started feeling really good. You know, again, coaching other people, everyone's so different. You know, it might happen faster. It might take a little longer than me, or it might, you know, everyone happens at a different pace. And I really, really implore you not to compare yourself to other people's journeys. You know, I fell victim to that time and time again. And if you listen to those recaps, you'll hear me like kind of double guessing myself in those first 5 months, because to me, it's like, how can I gain 10 pounds in, I swear, like 3 days, but I make this significant shift in what I'm eating and there's nothing, like no movement at all, you know, in those first 5 months. Like, I was just like, how is that even possible? And it was so frustrating for me. So I would start trying to do other things, you know, like, well, maybe I'm eating too much. Maybe I need to restrict my portions. Maybe I shouldn't be eating those sweet potato chips or tortilla chips sometimes. Maybe, you know, oh, I listened to this person and she cut out all grains. Oh, and these people don't snack. And oh, maybe I shouldn't eat nuts. You know, just listening to other people did it. And then that's when I found, though, when I started trying to experiment with that stuff, my eating became like harder. Like, it felt more like white knuckling it again, because I was trying, I think, to restrict too much. And there are some people that can't eat certain things, but I think, you know, you really have to experiment for yourself of what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And then just realize, too, that's going to evolve and change. I'll kind of get to fast forward to where I am now, where I feel like that has changed. Like, I am having to tweak some stuff again. I'm doing like a really kind of deep dive into experimentation for myself again at this point, you know, at age, you know, almost 43 instead of age 38 when I started this. Like, especially for women in these years, our hormones play such a huge role in things, I think. And there is just so much going on for us that, you know, things are gonna change. You know, even for people, you know, friends of mine that aren't at sugar addicts, you know, they've noticed changes in their body. Like, what the heck's going on? Like, my body has rearranged itself and I did not give it permission to do that. And I'm, you know, not changing anything. And suddenly, you know, everything looks different or is fitting different. So I do think, you know, it is something that will continue to evolve as we age or we go through different stages of our lives of, you know, our nutritional needs will probably change too. So it's really paying kind of close attention to what works and what doesn't work. And I just noticed for me when I started trying to restrict, oh, I'm not going to do any chips anymore or any popcorn anymore, then I couldn't stop thinking about the popcorn and the chips, and then I was eating more. So it just felt like that was a trigger for me. And so I just had to surrender and just trust that, you know what? Again, I am doing all these amazing things are happening inside my body that I just can't see right now. It might not be reflected on the outside yet. But, you know, I just remember thinking, you know, of all inside, you know, sugar and flour is so inflammatory in our body, you know, causes so much inflammation in the body. And then inflammation leads to pretty much every chronic disease, illness, you know, cancer, diabetes, all the things. And I just remember thinking, if I'm dialing that down and could just kind of feel the inside of my body just kind of calming down and being like, oh, like, oh, taking like a nice deep breath and just kind of a big detox, really, of all this crap that I've eaten for so long, just finally, you know, working its way out of my body and just all of the amazing things that were happening inside. So when I was getting kind of bummed about the weight not moving around, or tempted to like start eating less or fasting or, you know, adding things in, I just kind of had to remind myself, you know, at least for this first year, just no sugar, no flour. That already is such a huge change from the way I've been eating. So let's give our, you know, my body time to kind of catch up. And in my episode with Maddie Lansdowne, you know, he talks about that, and, you know, that it does take it's good to do things in smaller steps because it takes our bodies some time to adapt to these changes. So again, if we start off right off the bat trying to do too much, I think it's hard for us to really adapt. So there were many times though, especially in those first 5 months and afterwards too, but especially in the first 5 months when I wasn't losing weight or feeling much of a difference, that I kept trying to change and do what other people were doing. And I just kind of remind myself, even now, like when I interview people and I hear, oh my gosh, they sound like they're doing amazing with that, I should try that, or I should try this, I still have to really like take a second and check in with myself and say, is this what's good for me though? That's so great that that works for them, but is this what's going to work for me? And just really being honest with yourself about that. You know, we talk a lot about this in my group coaching and, you know, kind of experimenting and seeing what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And, you know, just really keeping, you know, an open mind and being really curious about it, you know, instead of being critical, oh, like, why can't I, you know, they can eat nuts and I can't. It's just like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder why, you know, having more of a curious approach really helped me too, especially in those first 5 months. You know, I know it's so hard to give ourselves that grace and compassion, self-compassion, but I really, really worked on that. You know, my self-care was just through the roof. You know, there were some days that I took a bath every single night, because that's what kept me out of the food. You know, I love to read. So, you know, I might go and buy a new book on my Kindle that would really absorb me. So I'd get lost in the book and not think about food. I mean, there was just so much that I was trying to do for myself, you know, on a daily basis, making sure I was really prepared, planning out my meals, you know, just really putting my recovery first and making sure, you know, I got an exercise every day. Like, I need that physical activity more for my mental well-being than anything else. I'm not one of those people that exercises and then sees like a change physically in my body. I had read somewhere that like 80% of weight loss is nutrition, only 20% is exercise. And for me, I feel like it's more like 90%. You know, in my earlier 20s, I was running like, you know, 6 or 7 miles a day. And maybe then I noticed a change in my body. But for the most part, it's more just the mental sanity that, especially here in the Pacific Northwest, we've had like one of the worst March and April, May, just so much rain this spring, and really colder temperatures. Like, I've really been struggling a lot and really have to push myself to go outside, but I feel so much better those days. I just get a walk outside in the fresh air, even if it's raining. It just helps me so, so much. So yeah, it was around, I think about 9 months in, I did my first like Kick Sugar Summit interview, like success story. And I did an interview around 9 months. And I remember at that point knowing I am not going back. So somewhere between month 5 and month 9, things just really fell into place and it got easier. It felt, you know, or in the beginning, it felt like so hard. Now it still feels like not eating sugar and flour and abstaining completely is so much easier for me than moderating ever was. Like, you know, that's a true addict. Like, abstaining is just so much easier. And even though I really wanted to be one of those people that could eat a moderation, there's just no way. I even know that now. There is no way. If I was like, oh, you know, it's been 4 years. I'm sure I could have like a little chocolate square. You know, I would, that would be the one bite that would then just send me into more, more, more. So I really am very, very aware of that for myself. And I just know that for me, I will have to abstain always. And it, for me though, also is so much easier than just trying to have just one. So around somewhere again, between months 5 and 9, I was very starting to see changes, not only in my outside physical body with being able to fit into smaller clothes and getting to, you know, I even, you know, something clicked around that 9 month period too, where I was just like, this is forever now. I am not going back. And I was so confident that I started actually giving away, you know, donating or consigning some of my nicer clothes in my bigger sizes, that I just knew, hey, this is actually going to stick. And that's really feels miraculous, you know, thinking back on that, because I always had like had to have every size in my closet. And there have been times that I would get rid of stuff with the hope, oh, yay, you know, like I don't want to wear these ever again, and then have to go right back and buy them, you know, like 2 months later when I fell off the wagon and I'm spending all this money on newer, bigger clothes. But this time it was just a real difference of seeing, yeah, this is just the way I eat now. And so it was really, really cathartic, I think, to go through some of those clothes and get them out of the closet, you know. And then even now, being able to like have clothes for a long time, you know, where I actually like wear them out to the point where I need to replace clothes. Like I have these like workout pants that I love, and they are like falling, a couple of them are like holes everywhere, like falling to pieces at the seams. I'm like, I really need to get new ones of these. But before, you know, I probably never wore, was able in the same size long enough to really wear it out. So I love, you know, when it's like the change of seasons, if it's summertime and I get out my summer clothes, it's like, oh, wow, they still fit. It's not worried, you know, what's going to fit, what's not going to fit. Even in the morning when I wake up, just knowing I can reach into my closet and it's, things are going to fit. Like that is such freedom to me. Again, even though the weight loss isn't, you know, my primary benefit, I will say it is so freeing to not fret about that and stress about that and just detest and hate my body the way that I did for so long. So, you know, that first year, especially those first 5 months though, were tough. And then I would say I felt a shift around month 5, and then by month 9, I knew I wasn't going back. And I do mention this though, in my recap, that even, you know, that first December though, that first holiday season was really hard for me. And things that I didn't even realize would trigger me did, you know, just all the, you know, rituals and, you know, around the holidays, like just things that traditions, you know, that you've done in your family. And it's like, didn't even realize how much were around food and, you know, specific foods. And even just going into a store at the holidays, like I loved, used to love like peppermint bark and be like, oh my gosh, I can't have that. Or, you know, my favorite Christmas cookie or whatever. So that first Christmas hit me really, really hard. And that was almost a year in, you know, like I'd almost been a full year. So I knew I wasn't going to eat it, but it really like kind of challenged me. And so, you know, what do you do in those times? And this is where I feel like just giving up, you know, the sugar and the flour is just part one. Like figuring out what works for you food wise is just a small part of your recovery. You know, the real, real healing comes from starting to do some of the inner work. And for me, I ate all my emotions. You know, I ate if I was happy, if I was sad, if I was mad, if I was bored, you know, if I was frustrated, whatever, I've really turned to food as my, was probably my only coping mechanism. Although I did always, I have always loved to work out. I will say that. So at least I had, you know, a healthy outlet there, but mostly, you know, food kind of trumped everything as far as coping mechanisms go. So if I was feeling down, that's what I would turn to. Or if I wanted to celebrate, you know, that's what I would turn to. And so really for me, I think especially in those first 5 months and the first year, suddenly, you know, all this stuff was kind of coming up, or, you know, I was forced to feel emotions that I used to eat about, and I felt really overwhelmed by that. And it was about a year into my journey that a friend introduced me to emotion code and told me that, you know, she was seeing a practitioner and what it did. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I need to do that. And at the time she was completely booked up, so I got on her wait list. But I Googled, you know, emotion code practitioners in Portland, and found a chiropractor, or actually an acupuncturist here that is also certified in the emotion code, and did like little demonstrations. So that was my first experience with emotion code, was I actually went and watched one of her demos, and she would do a little bit on anyone that wanted to try it. So I got to have that experience of having some emotions cleared, and in person too, which was really cool. And so basically, you know, for those of you that don't know, the emotion code was created by Dr. Bradley Nelson, who is now retired, but was a chiropractor. And he had found that, you know, maybe he was helping like 85% of his clients with regular chiropractic care, but there was some people that weren't getting better. And it really, you know, frustrated him because he wanted to be able to help these people. And he was introduced to energy work. And that's when he really started realizing the emotional component that, at, you know, they say that most physical pain has some kind of emotion at the root of it. And so as an adult, most adults have all these trapped emotions that get stuck that we feel so strongly, you know, at the time, but we're unable to process them and release them. So they become trapped in our body. And a lot of times, you know, that can lead to, you know, physical pain, right? But it can even lead to things like cancer and disease. You know, they'll say a lot, almost all of that has an emotional component there. And so this really kind of resonated with me, that I'm sure I'm like, oh my gosh, I used to eat about everything. So I must have, I think he said like the average adult had maybe like 400 trapped emotions. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm sure I have way more than that, because I never allowed myself to feel the feelings. And then, you know, the thing is, when we stop and just feel the feeling, it will actually pass and it will release. Whereas if we're trying to numb it, and a lot of people numb things, you know, it's not just us food addicts. You could be numbing with other things, you know, by, you know, watching Netflix or online shopping or whatever. Like, we're just keeping ourselves really, really busy so you don't have to feel these things. And then that just, you know, allows them to get trapped in your body, so you cannot, you know, then you don't release them. So I really now have, but I still get trapped emotions, of course, but I really try hard now to just sit and feel and be uncomfortable. And I've realized I'm a person that doesn't like to be uncomfortable at all, you know, and that was something that I have to, and I still continue to work on that. I am a work in progress. Like, I am trying to become more comfortable with being uncomfortable. And so one of those things is just feeling the feelings and just being okay, being sad. And then I find if I could just like kind of feel into it and pause and breathe and just see what my body's trying to tell me, it releases a lot faster than when I try to push it away. But I started working with my emotion code practitioner, I'd say a little over a year into my journey. And it just made such a huge impact, you know, cleared up a lot of stuff from my past, a lot of stuff, you know, to currently go that was going on currently, and just was amazed at this tool that, you know, again, if you think of it, just kind of emotional baggage that we all carry with us. There's a lot of stuff that even you can have inherited trapped emotions that you inherited from your mom or dad, that they inherited from their mom or dad, and so on and so on, that can go generations and generations and generations back. And you can release, you know, I love when the inherited trap motions come up, because that releases from you and your entire family line. So if you have siblings or nieces and nephews, your parents, your grandparents, even those that have passed, you know, aunts and uncles, children, grandchildren, it just clears from everybody. And I think that just really helps break up some of these family patterns that get, you know, handed down generation to generation. So I love when I have inherited emotions come up, because it just feels like such a deep clearing. There's also absorbed emotions that will come up sometimes. So if you're around someone that's feeling something very strongly, it doesn't necessarily mean it's directed towards you, but that emotion can get trapped inside your body. And especially if you're more of an empath like I am, I tend to pick up on a lot of people's emotions. And I have since learned how to shield myself. So when I work with my emotion code clients, you know, a lot of times we work on shielding, and but we can clear out some of those absorbed emotions that we're feeling. And the cool thing, again, about those is they're going to clear from you and also the person that you absorb them from. And I've experienced with some of my clients where, say, someone is absorbing a lot from their spouse, and we clear them out. And then the next session, they've reported back, oh my gosh, my spouse is like a new person. Like, it's helped them so much, just even though we weren't working directly on them, just indirectly by clearing out this absorbed stuff. So I love, love doing that. There's also something called the heart wall. And this is something that really resonated with me when I first read about emotion code. And you can get the book, you know, The Emotion Code, by Dr. Bradley Nelson. He has a great website too, which I'll link here in the show notes, but it's discoverhealing.com. And he has some really, really good videos. I know I'm not doing a very good job of explaining like how it all works, because it really goes into like quantum physics that I, you know, don't totally understand, you know, but I also know from experiencing emotion code first in person and then over the phone, and it felt exactly the same, which was so crazy for me to experience, that you can do this energy work over the phone. Like, you don't have to be in person for that. That like blew my mind. And I can attest to that, because I've had it done both ways and it feels exactly the same. I still feel, you know, a good clearing even when I'm just working with, you know, a practitioner over the phone. So you can go though to that discoverhealing.com. He has some great videos to really go more into the details of how it all works, and a lot of free information on there if you are interested. And you can even look up the emotion code chart. You know, it's just a chart of like 60 emotions, and you can look that up online. And this is something you can do yourself too. You know, you don't have to get certified in it. The only reason I got certified was because I wanted to start seeing clients. When I first did it, I was able to attend a live workshop in person with Dr. Brad, which was incredible. It was just like a, you know, maybe 6-hour workshop. This is pre-COVID. I got really lucky to be able to do this in person. And that was enough for me just to start, and you can even do this just from the book, start practicing on yourself. For me, I learn much better when I'm in person. So I don't know if I could have learned just from the book, but being able to go in person and do it and then practice right away was just an incredible experience. So I knew it was something that I wanted to do for myself, for my family, for my friends, for the kids. But then I saw like what an impact it made on people. And I just felt like with my coaching, what a great thing to bring into, especially in the addictive, you know, group coaching that I do. Just what a great way to help people even more by clearing out these trapped emotions, because it's something that I see time and time again for people, is they're just not comfortable with these emotions that are coming up. So I just feel like emotion code is just one of the many, many tools, you know, that I use in my recovery, but it's been a really significant one for me. And because it helped me so much, that's why I decided to get certified. So it would be something that I could, again, bring to my clients. And I see a lot, I have a lot of emotion code clients that aren't addicts at all, right? Like, it helps so many people. So one of the things, though, that I learned about early on was something called the heart wall. And this really resonated with me. And it's basically what it sounds like. It's when you have some kind of traumatic event that you go through and your subconscious is trying to protect you from completely falling apart. And so it puts up this wall of trapped emotions around your heart. And at the time, it's great because that's probably what keeps you going and functioning and stops you from completely falling apart. However, over time, it can cause a lot of issues. It can cause physical pain, like neck and shoulder pain. It can cause a lot of emotional distress, feeling disconnected, not just from yourself, because think of how powerful our hearts are and how important it is to be tuned into our hearts. If we have a wall up, that's going to block us too. So you're blocking a lot of access to your own heart, but also other people, you know, so it affects your relationships. A lot of people report they feel like they're kind of on the outside looking in. And there's most adults, I forget what the percentage is that Dr. Brad says, like maybe 90% of adults have some kind of heart wall. And for me, I thought, oh yeah, I definitely have this. And I did. And, you know, for an example for me, for my heart wall was from age 19. And that totally made sense for me. So you can find out, like, we usually muscle test and see, okay, how old were you when you created this heart wall? And that's another thing with any trapped emotion that comes up. I always will muscle test and say, is this something that you're experiencing currently? And it's either a yes or a no. And if it's a no, we find out what age it's from. And this is pretty approximate with between, you know, give or take a year, they say, but I find it to be pretty accurate. And sometimes, you know, we might be saying, oh, that was bitterness from age 22. And you might think, huh, I don't know what that is. Or we might say, oh, I know exactly what that is, but it doesn't matter. Your subconscious mind knows, and it's still going to clear it. That's what's so amazing. But for me, whenever I do a session with my practitioner, I always write everything down, because there are times then that I go back where I might not have, like, I don't know what that's about. And then a few days later, I might remember, oh yeah, that's right. So, but something I really like about emotion code is you don't have to go into the details. If you don't want to remember it or think about it, you don't have to. Like, your subconscious is still going to clear it. And I've done a lot of therapy, and I love therapy. And I just think emotion code, though, is such a nice complement to it, because instead of just talking about it, talk. I have a lot of clients that come to me that are like, I'm tired of talking about it. I want to release around it too. And that's what emotion code does. It helps then release these emotions too. So I love, you know, this idea of the heart wall. I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, yes, this makes total sense to me. And so for mine, I was 19 years old. And what, you know, I knew exactly what it was about. As soon as, you know, I said, oh, 19, I thought, oh yeah, that's the year that my parents got divorced. My first love broke up with me, and a good friend of mine from high school died in a car accident, all within 3 months of each other. You know, this is my freshman year of college. Plus, just add on top, it was my freshman year of college. I was 9 hours away from home playing Division I field hockey, and all this stuff, like, my world just kind of fell apart. And I remember my roommate at the time was like, I don't even understand how you get out of bed every morning. And I'm sure it's because this heart wall went up, and that's what kept me going. And for me personally, once I you know, released all the emotions out of my heart wall. And it usually takes, you know, several sessions depending on how big the heart wall is. You know, each session you can clear between 1 to 5 emotions out of the heart wall. So sometimes, you know, it takes multiple sessions, but each time I felt a little lighter. And one big thing for me was actual physical pain in the chest or in the shoulders and neck. I still get like hold stress there, you know, like it still always feels good if I get a massage, but it's just not the same almost like crippling pain that I used to have. Like that was one thing that I immediately felt. But I also feel like that was a big, big part of being able to love myself again and loving and accepting myself exactly as I am, and feeling that unconditional self-love was being able to clear out that heart wall so I had access, you know, to my heart again, and definitely seeing shifts in relationships. You know, I love clearing people's heart walls and have so many stories of people saying just how much it's made their, you know, relationships with their partners even more intimate and deeper, or even with other family members. So the heart wall, you know, again, or if you have like block, you know, it can block your creativity or blocks to abundance. I mean, you know, once that heart wall is cleared, you really can live, I think, like fully and completely. So I love, love, love being able to clear heart walls. I love working with, sometimes I work with couples and we're able to clear things out of the relationship as well. It also works really well for children, you know, and for animals. You know, there's some people that just work on animals full time, especially horses, which I just think is amazing. And a lot of animals, especially dogs and cats, seem to absorb stuff from their humans. So, you know, trying to probably help them, they're absorbing a lot. So it's really amazing just to see what comes up when we are clearing. So that's emotion code. And I, again, if it's something that interests you, check out the emotion code book. Feel free to book a session with me online. The other thing then, after getting certified in the emotion code and doing that for about 1.5 years, I started getting interested in the body code. And once I had a body code session, I was like, that's it. I need to do this too. So I got certified in the body code last summer. And so now my sessions are a mix of both. Like I say, just kind of see what your body wants to do. So I offer 30 minutes, 45 minutes, or 60-minute sessions. And I always recommend at least 3 sessions so you can really feel some shifts. Some people feel release right away. Other people, it takes a few sessions. We're just all so different in the way that we process things. But with the body code, you know, it includes the emotion code. So there is emotions there too, but it goes into things like if your one of your chakras is out of alignment, it could even be a tooth that's out of alignment, you know, different organs, glands. It could be, you know, the amygdala. It could be different systems in your body. So it could be toxins or pathogens, something in your nutrition or lifestyle. Like, so fascinating what comes up in the body code. And most of my sessions, like I said, are a mix of both. So it could be, hey, you know, I'm having this hip pain, chronic hip pain. You know, I have a client recently that after, you know, one session, her chronic hip pain went down from like a 9 to a 1. And we did some body code, but there was also emotions stuck there too. So it was some realignment that we had to do and some, you know, different bones, but then also underneath some emotions that were stuck there. So I love doing this so, so much and feel like it's been such a huge part of my journey. But it's just one tool of many, many tools. If it does not sound like, I think when I heard about it, I was like, yes, I need to do that. So if you're listening to this and you want to do it, you know, make an appointment with me. If you're listening and it's like, no, that doesn't resonate, that's okay. There's so many different tools out here that are available. For me, I talk a lot about having a morning and evening ritual. So starting my day off on the right foot and ending it on the right foot. And that starts with a lot of gratitude, you know, to get my day going, and gratitude at the end of the day. I also start each morning with at least one meditation, sometimes more. I also really love the tapping app. The tapping solution. I do some kind of tapping every morning as well. And then the most recent thing I've gotten into is affirmations. I've probably added those in, you know, really, you know, since the beginning, but really more seriously in the past like year, where I have a whole list of notes on my phone and I just write, you know, have all these affirmations, and I try to read through those every single day. And even more recently in the past month, I got my kids one of those little mini trampoline like rebounders. And we were going to keep it in the garage, but it's just kind of fun to have in the house. And I find myself, again, just to kind of shake it out, sometimes I'll go and jump on the trampoline for a few minutes, and I just say my affirmations out loud as I'm jumping on the trampoline. And this, I mean, again, you feel like ridiculous, but I'm usually like cracking up by the end, like, you know, I am safe. I am loved. I am enough. I love myself unconditionally and abundantly. I radiate light, life, love, and joy. And I'm just like saying these things and jumping on the trampoline. So that's been something that I love doing. And it's an instant, you know, uplift. I also talked earlier about getting that physical activity for me. That's also really important. And connecting outside, being outside in nature, taking baths, I love doing face masks. I love getting a massage, whatever. I mean, there's so many different things. Self-care sometimes is going to bed early when you're really tired and leaving the to-do list for the next day. You know, it can be reading, you know, a book instead of, you know, working on your computer late at night. So there's so many different ways, but I feel like self-care is just critical, a huge, huge piece of my recovery, and something that I'm very aware of when I let that slip, that I can feel, you know, more cravings or stress coming up. Because I think so much about this is just managing our stress level. So finding those tools that do that for you, whatever that looks like for you. And there's so many different options out there. And I think that is part of the fun part of this journey, is discovering, you know, different tools that you really enjoy. It could be, oh my gosh, I love to dance. So every day I have a 5-minute dance party, you know, whatever it is. For me too, I love being outside and connecting, you know, in nature. I love being at the beach. So building in those times and really putting my recovery first above all else. You know, I think that's so hard to do as a mom, but I am a crap mom if my recovery isn't in place. So if I want to be the mom that I want to be, my recovery has to come absolutely number one. So again, I talk a lot about these in other episodes. I'm kind of repeating myself, but I really, really just say, you know, to stay in recovery, it's just I hold it close to me. I know how easily this could go away even 4 years later. So I just really, really kind of hold my recovery close to me and give it a lot of respect and just really put that a lot of effort there. And just really, I know I can tell when I start that stress level starts coming up and my self-care goes down, that's when I start feeling like out of control. So anything that you can do to help keep those stress levels down, there's so many things. If you like to go in a hot tub or a sauna, or I just started recently, I did my first saltwater float. That was amazing. Anything that resonates with you, it doesn't have to be what works for me. Again, you know, find the food plan that works for you, and then find the recovery, you know, you know, toolkit that works for you too, and just have a lot of those tools. And then the third piece is having that connection and community support so that you know you're not alone, and that when you are struggling, there are people there that got you, you know, that they're going to help you through this. So that's really my full story and, you know, where I am now. And each year I do a recap on my Sugarversary and kind of reflect on the year back. So, you know, a lot has changed from the beginning. And like I said, even now at age almost 43, I am still evolving and experimenting. So I do really just have surrendered to this being a lifelong journey. Like there really is no finish line, like you have arrived, everything's perfect. You know, just because you give up sugar and flour, life isn't going to suddenly be a breeze. It's still going to have its ups and downs, but you're now going to have the tools to deal with it so much better. So I do find I have a lot more joy in my life now in my recovery. So I hope that that helps everybody. This is my last episode for me talking for this year. I just wanted to remind everyone that season 4 will wrap up at the end of this month on June 29th. I always take July and August off, and then I will kick off season 5 on Wednesday, September 7th. So I hope everyone has a fantastic summer. If there's any topics or speakers you would like me to interview or want to hear more about, please feel free to email me at Siobhan@unsweetensayo.com. You can find me on my website, unsweetensayo.com. I love, love, love hearing from you. So if you would like to, or if you want to share your story and be on the podcast, please, please send me an email. Next week, we'll hear from Susan Miller, who's going to be celebrating her 2-year Sugarversary. And her latest approach is just simplicity. So we're going to talk a lot about that. On June 15th, I have another recovery story with Jose Chavez, and he shares his amazing recovery story. On June 22nd, Leslie Colburn is back to celebrate her 1-year Sugarversary and really reflecting back on her year. And then my season finale on June 29th is going to be the Sugar X creators, Judy Wolf, Dave Wolf, and Anna Freeling, who I've interviewed individually, are going to all come on together. So I'm really, really excited about that and just love talking and hearing all these stories and talking to everybody. Again, that's such a big part of what my accountability and what keeps me going and on track now. So again, I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or feedback or ideas for next year. Please reach out to me. And everyone just have an amazing summer, and I will see you next year. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day. And remember, life is so much sweeter without sugar.